next to the next two items, and why don't you read those together, please, I think? Yes? Yes.
162, approve and adopt zoning confirmation letter responding to request for zoning confirmation on Southeast 3rd and Harrison, submitted by Right to Dream 2. 163, affirm the City of Portland's intent to relocate Right to Dream 2 onto city property located on Southeast 3rd and Harrison.
Okay. Commissioner Fritz, would you like to start?
You have the next bit.
Sorry, I do.
You're going to be talking about the wider picture of
yes,
the state of emergency.
Yes, I'm sorry. I had you queued up here, but I should go first. Okay, welcome everyone. So the purpose of these two items is to allow the development of a new site for Right to Dream 2. The context for this is that we are in a housing state of emergency. Those aren't just words, those are a formal declaration of a unanimous vote of this City Council. We've been in that state of emergency now for a little more than 4 months. During that time, we have, as a community, between the efforts of the City of Portland, Multnomah County, and local churches, opened more than 400 new shelter beds in our city. We have finished housing our backlog of homeless veterans, although there are, of course, new homeless veterans every month, and they need to be housed as well. But we began last year with 690 homeless veterans in Portland, and we housed 695. That's a good start. The council has dedicated $354 million, let me say that again, $354 million to affordable housing and homelessness. So this is a serious crisis that is getting serious attention from local governments, not just the city, but also Multnomah County, Housing Authority, Home Forward, that is, City of Gresham, and others. And I'm proud of that work. Meanwhile, there have been a lot of solutions created at the community level, and Right to Dream 2 is one of them. They have been in Old Town for 5 years. I have a memorandum here from the commander of the Central Precinct who says this: the Portland Police Bureau quickly established a positive relationship with Right to Dream 2 since its inception. We did not and do not experience increased calls for service at R2-D2. In fact, it appears that R2-D2 manages whatever incidents occur within its borders without police intervention. Upon inquiry with our police officers who routinely work the area, I am assured that calls to R2-D2 are essentially non-existent. Signed, Sarah Westbrook, who's the commander of Central Precinct. So I, as the police commissioner, appreciate the fact that not only are people finding a safe place to rest and access services and move into housing in many cases, but also that they've made part of our city a little safer, because I can't think of another corner in the central city where Central Precinct officers haven't been called to a problem over the course of the last 5 years. So I want to thank R2-D2 for that work as well. I believe that this site is a good location for a temporary solution. And that's what we're about here. Commissioner Fritz?
And we did, thank you, Mayor, we did have a work session, a two-hour work session on what the council is doing in partnership with the county and Home Forward with a home for everyone to establish a home for everyone, a real home. Let's be very clear. Nobody here thinks that living in a tent is an ideal solution. Nobody thinks that this is the option for helping people who are living outside. There are many of us here who feel that this living in a safe place with a community of supportive people and with services is a lot better than sleeping under a tarp on a sidewalk or sleeping in a tent by yourself in some unknown location. And so we're not here to deliberate on the housing strategy and the bigger houselessness issue. What we're looking at is this a good place for the successful Right to Dream 2 community to have a new location? So in the Planning Commission's review, Planning Sustainability Commission asked the council if we pass the street vacation to add three conditions. One is to address the concerns of the adjacent property owner, which we have just promised to do. The second is to hold a public process on the use of the land, and that's what this hearing is all about. And then the third is to convene a good neighbor agreement process. Now, that would follow after today if the council votes to continue to pursue a new Right to Dream 2 at the 3rd and Harrison site, that we would convene, I would convene, with a neutral Right to Resolutions Northwest facilitator, stakeholders from the adjacent community, and others who are deeply invested in the success of the whole neighborhood to have a good neighbor agreement process. We did have a very constructive conversation at the end of January with community members at St. Philip Neri Church, as I have referenced. I do see many folks who were there for part of that discussion. And it was really evidence to me that once Portlanders recognize each other as human beings and neighbors and sit down and listen to each other as well as talk to each other, that we can find good solutions together. We have been working for over a year and a half now to find a new place for the Right to Dream 2 rest area. They do need to leave their current location by October 31st. The Portland Development Commission has agreed to purchase the lot and plans to develop it, and the property owner wants to sell. So that we do have a deadline of October 31st. I think that's correct, right? So and we and just people have said, well, why not somewhere else? Why not Nicolai Street? Why not here? And and when I say we, I mean Josh Alpert, the mayor's chief of staff, looked into dozens of locations prior to settling on this one. One of the reasons that this location was chosen was because it was formerly in government hands, and we were able to have first choice on it. Other private properties that came available just got snapped up way too fast, or else were not suitable. This site is a great location. It's on streetcar, and the city owns the streetcar, so we can provide tickets to Right to Dream so that their folks can get to and from services in the central city. We're also in partnership with Right to Dream 2, planning to provide bathrooms, showers, laundry facilities that will help the existing population of people living outside in the central east side and improve services and safety in the central east side. And so that's why I am urging my colleagues to consider accepting this proposal. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
So, Mayor, as I understand it, we have a zoning letter that we're going to take up, whether to accept the letter, and then we're going to take up the second resolution. Is that correct?
That's right. We have staff presentation and some invited testimony to walk us through all that, and then, yes.
So most of the questions that I have, I'm perfectly happy accepting a report on the zoning. It is what it is. I will accept it. The questions I have to do with the final resolution. So are we going to take them up together?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
And I also, thank you for reminding me, Commissioner Fish, I need to move a substitute Exhibit B in both agenda items 162 and 63. This adds the proposed 15-foot buffer for truck access to the adjacent property. Of course, the proposed site plan is not set in stone, and that can, since we're now going to be having some more discussions, it might change anyway. But I would just like to move that as a ministerial piece
okay.
to go
so
with these.
Commissioner Fritz moves the revised site plan. It's substitute Exhibit B. Is there a second?
Second.
Further discussion? Roll call on adopting that amendment.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Novick.
Aye.
Hales.
Aye.
Now I'd like to invite Mac Wickstrom from the Bureau of Development Services to come up and explain the zoning confirmation letter. This is important because one of the cruxes of the issue is this use even allowed on the property under the zoning? And so Matt is going to go through that first.
Microsoft being helpful like it always is.
Good afternoon. My name is Matt Wickstrom. I'm with the Bureau of Development Services, and I'll be talking about the zoning confirmation letter requested by Right to Dream 2 today. So first of all, what is a zoning confirmation letter, and how is this one unique? The purpose of a zoning confirmation letter is to verify in writing the allowed uses, development standards, and regulations applicable to a specific site. And this requires a zoning analysis of the proposal often as well. In this case, Right to Dream 2 has asked If a use similar to the similar in operation and function to its current use or current facility could locate at Southeast 3rd in Harrison. And this letter is unique due to the high level of public interest in the proposed use of the site. Commissioner Saltzman has asked that this this zoning confirmation letter be considered and affirmed by City Council. It's important to describe some key elements of the proposed use, but you're going to hear more about the proposed use from Bob Keita and representatives of Right to Dream 2 later. But what we're looking at here is a rest area with tents, providing overnight shelter for houseless individuals. It would be operated by Right to Dream 2, which is a nonprofit organization. Tents would range in size from 1 to 2 person tents to up to 10 person tents. Structures with approximately 2,100 square feet of net building area containing restrooms, showers, laundry facilities, a kitchen, and storage for personal belongings would be provided. Other houseless individuals who are not sheltered at the rest area may also use some of the facilities, as Commissioner Fritz said. And then a fence may provide privacy at the rest area. These are the items that were submitted as part of the zoning confirmation letter request. First of all was an application. Second was a letter with questions and a summary of the use. There is a description of the use as well as a site plan showing the location of where tents would be, as well as some of the structures that I discussed. We also reviewed, in crafting the letter, the Right to Dream 2 website, and then State of Oregon documents. That was primarily to determine the nonprofit nature of the organization. So the questions asked were, first of all, and this is really the primary question, what use category does the proposal fall under? And that's what zoning code use category. Is that use allowed? Is it limited or is it conditional? Does the use or site plan require a land use review or would it be allowed by right? Are there plan district or overlay zone requirements that apply to the proposal? What development standards would apply? And then how would a fence made of doors be regulated?
Okay. Good.
This is the zoning map of the site. You'll see it zoned IG1. You'll see the land itself is in red. The vacated right-of-way is shown in green. The site is located at Southeast 3rd in Harrison and contains a portion of vacated right-of-way, as I just said. Owner of the site is the City of Portland, and the site is approximately 18 to 20,000 square feet in area, and that includes the vacated right-of-way. So there's really two key questions that apply to the zoning confirmation request. The first is, what is the appropriate use category for R2D2's proposed use? And the zoning confirmation letter concludes that the community service use category is the most appropriate category for R2D2's proposed use. And this determination was dependent on the second question, which is, are tents, structures, or buildings? And the answer is no, they are not. Structures are defined in the code as objects constructed in or on the ground, and structures include buildings, which are essentially structures with walls and a roof. Structures also include flagpoles and signs, decks and fences. These are things that are supported by a foundation or a footing. The types of tents that are proposed do not require a foundation or a footing. They're easily assembled and taken down. Now we're getting into the appropriate use category. Regarding the first question, which is what use category would Right to Dream R2D2's proposal fall under, it appears to meet all the qualities of the community service use category. The use is operated by a nonprofit. It provides shelter and stability. There are no membership requirements. Amenities at the site would be available to other houseless individuals as well as those who take shelter at the site. And the proposal does not... and because the proposal... includes less than 3,000 square feet of net building area, it would be allowed by right under the zoning code. And this is essentially the answer to the question number two. There's two examples of community service uses given in the zoning code, and these are mass shelters and short-term housing. So these are still community service uses, but they're two examples of community service uses. And there's many other types of community services, community centers, senior centers, museums, all sorts of things. So consideration was given in the zoning confirmation letter to whether the proposed use matched either of these two examples. The definition of mass shelter refers to structures for sleeping. As we already discussed, the tents are not structures. They're easily assembled and taken down. No sleeping will occur inside the buildings on the site or inside the structures. And the development standards for mass shelters refer to buildings and net building area. There are buildings proposed, but these are accessory to the use of the site, which is a community service but not a mass shelter. As such, we concluded that the proposed use is not a mass shelter. Another example of a community service is short-term housing. We've covered that tents aren't structures. Tents also aren't rooms, and that's explained in the zoning confirmation letter. Short-term housing may or may not include food preparation and shared shower facilities. This is just an example of uses that may or may not be there. These are located at the proposed use, but once again, it's not a condition of determining whether this is a short-term housing use. The proposal doesn't involve reservations or referrals. In short-term, the description of short-term housing refers to reservations and referrals. It also refers to parking, and there's no parking proposed at this facility, nor would any be expected. The zoning confirmation letter also considered other potential use categories, one being retail, sales, and service. And of the four subcategories within retail, sales, and service, the rest area clearly isn't two of them, which is sales-oriented or repair-oriented. There's two other subcategories. One is the personal service-oriented subcategory, and the proposal doesn't match the examples given for personal services. These are things like banks, laundromats, photocopy services, etc. Nor does the proposal match what's called entertainment, the entertainment-oriented subcategory. Clearly, the proposal is not entertainment, nor is it recreation. It's shelter. And then finally, we looked at the group living category to see if the proposal would be consistent with that. Once again, the tents are not structures. The group living use category refers to residing in structures. The length of stay for group living uses is a month or longer. In this situation, the right to room two, the people who seek shelter there could stay there for one night. They could stay there for longer than a month, but it isn't a tenancy for a month or longer. Examples of accessory uses provided for group living in the group living use category also don't match what's proposed at right to room two. And the group living use category also refers to buildings. So the conclusion was that the use category most closely matches the community service, but it does not match the examples of mass shelter or short-term housing. While the Right to Dream 2 proposal is an example, not mentioned in the zoning code, it most closely fits the characteristics of a community service use. The last three questions related to zoning requirements. Regarding those questions, there's really few zoning standards that apply in the IG1 zone. Fences, including a fence made of doors, would be allowed up to 8 feet in height. And the Central City Plan District also specifies that no parking is required. And then as far as any regulations from the Central City sub-district, none address the proposal. And that concludes the staff presentation on the zoning confirmation letter.
Questions? I have one, or maybe a couple, but they're related. So based on the council's decision that we've just made on the street vacation, and given that the underlying zoning is industrial,
mm-hmm.
if the compliance with the council's condition of approval, which Commissioner Fish added in our discussion, requires the construction of a driveway on our property, the city of Portland's property, in order to serve the adjacent industrial business and allow truck movements to and from their doorway. I assume that the construction of such a truck driveway is an allowed use in the industrial zone and would not require a second zoning confirmation letter.
You're correct, yes.
Thank you. Any other questions for Matt? Okay,
great.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Some invited testimony, Commissioner?
We do. We have a Right to Dream 2 representative, Trish Reed, Bob Keita from the mayor's office, and Mark Lakeman and Tim Merrill, architects. And Carla, if you could run the three-minute clock, because we have two panels. They'll be brief, and then we are going to get public testimony, hopefully by 4 or shortly thereafter.
Okay.
Trish, welcome. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. I appreciate your time, and I really do appreciate that all the work that has gone into all of this. So I just wanted to say thank you for that to start with. My name is Trish Reed. I am a member of Right to Dream 2. I am also on the board of Right to Dream 2. One of the things that is encouraged is that you expand and better yourself as a member of Right to Dream 2. I recently have acquired a part-time temporary job and do lots of work around the rest area as well. Sorry, I am a little nervous.
Go ahead, you're fine.
I'm just going to give you some quick statistics of what Right to Dream 2 has accomplished over the 4 years that we have been on the fourth and Burnside site, sorry. We have been able to house 297 people. We have had 286 people find work. 35 people have kicked extensive drug habits. We've had 17 women be able to keep their children. We have had 15 people complete online education, two of whom just graduated this last year, one from PCC and one from PSU. Crime rates actually didn't go up when we moved in. They actually went down a little tiny bit. So we are in solidarity with many organizations, including the Homeless Bill of Rights, the Columbia River Keepers, Black Lives Matter, Healthcare for All Oregon, Anti-Displacement, Tenants United, Right to Be Safe, which is a self-defense class that happens once a month. Working Families of Oregon, Street Roots, Sister of the Road Cafe, 15 Now, and other camps like Hazelnut Grove and My Backyard, which is trying to be established out in outer southeast. We cater to everyone who comes through our gates, whether they're disabled, mentally ill, LGBTQ. We do not discriminate, and I would just like to say, we do our best to provide safety and warmth and love to our family, because these people are our family. Thank you.
Just one point of clarification. You don't have children at the rest area, right?
That is correct.
So you mentioned about mothers keeping their babies. Could you just explain what you meant by that?
Sure. We have pregnant women who have came through the rest area, and we referred them to midwives instead of sending them to the hospital where the question is asked, if they're houseless or not, and that causes them to lose their children because they are required to report to the state that an individual is houseless.
So if I can just follow up, that was my question. So there are absolutely no children living at Right to Dream 2?
That is correct. Anyone under the age of 18 is not allowed.
And that rule will apply to the new location as well?
Yes, it will.
Okay, thank you. And that's a specific condition of operation we have somewhere codified between the city and Right to Dream 2?
That would be in the use agreement.
Is that what we're considering right now?
No.
Oh, that's next?
There will, if this is approved, there will be a use agreement created. And you're saying, Bob, that would be an item in the use agreement?
Rules of conduct, all the good neighbor agreement, all those items.
Bob, there is a space use agreement, and there is an Exhibit E, which has code of conduct. And perhaps you could show where that applies. I don't see it in either.
The use agreement is not complete at this time. We are still working to develop the full use agreement because there are items of it, such as the good neighbor agreement and things that will be included. Is that part of your code of conduct? as far as the age?
No, it is
not. It is not part of the code of conduct.
But just to clarify, Exhibit A is a draft that's still in progress. If the council approves the continued discussion, then there will be a final use agreement that would include Right to Dream's code of conduct as well as other agreements.
Well, I have a copy of Right to Dream's code of conduct, which I assume is your existing code of conduct.
That is correct.
And there's nothing in the code of conduct that addresses minors.
That is true, but we do, if we feel we have a minor, we do ask for ID and we do not allow them in until we can verify that they are over the age of 18.
So this is potentially something to flag for the use agreement. It sounds like it's not nailed down as well as some members of the council would like.
Absolutely.
Okay?
Yes, absolutely. Okay, so Facility Services is responsible for procuring properties throughout the city whenever, you know, it needs to find. As we go through our process, our due diligence in identifying properties and then determine whether it's a good property for the city buy, we conduct at minimum a phase one environmental test of the site. Due to this site's location next to East Side Plating, there was concern from the start that we wanted to make sure that we weren't putting anybody in any kind of jeopardy as far as locating next to an industrial plant that might have issues. So we conducted a phase one and we conducted a phase two. Phase two actually goes into where we do soil sampling and going down into the soil to verify there aren't contaminants or reasons of concern. Our concern, of course, is in a camp. You have people down close to the ground, so we wanted to make sure that the ground was safe. While we found some minor contamination, there was no, you know, major red flags, and we'll be able to address the actual site so that it will provide no issues as far as safety issues for the residents of the camp. With that, though, we also looked at air, and that's not something we normally do, but it's good, you know, timing, actually, with what's happening in Southeast recently, you see in the news. We actually conducted air studies, not just at this site, but across the way from it and at their current site to verify the air quality in these areas. The actual site, the R2D2 site that we're talking about today, the 3rd and Harrison and the OMF property, was clean. We measured it at residential standards. So typically, if you're in an industrial area, they do industrial air quality standards. We actually asked to have it done at a residential standard to make sure that, again, this is more in, you know, people eating, sleeping, not, you know, working in a plant.
Did we measure for lead, chromium, and what's the other one?
Cadmium.
I will have to go back and look at the report, but there were no flags as far as carcinogens.
But I guess my question is, did we measure for those?
I will have to go back and look at the report specifically for those items. But in the residential testing, you know, we passed for residential area.
I guess I would ask the question when East Side Plating comes back to testify. I will ask them the same question. What can you tell us about emissions of those substances?
I will say that our studies basically showed that East Side Plating is doing a remarkable job as far as they're scrubbing their air, clean standards, both in the transfer of their chemicals, everything else, because the soils were clean and the air was clean, which shows a wonderful track record for their business and what they've done, considering the chemicals and things they're using. So it's a very positive report in that sense of both the business and for our proposed use now.
Bob, just to follow up, in the notes that my staff gave me, they said that the findings were that the air and soil quality were low risk for a healthy adult who was at the site for less than a year. So
that's
why
correct.
The qualification? First of all, there are going to be adults there that are not necessarily healthy. There are lots of people who are sleeping outside. So what can you tell us about the qualification that the low risk applies to healthy adults who are at the site for less than a year?
The less than a year was based on that it's a camp, that it's not actual residential long-term housing. And so they used the less than a year as that example. As far as the healthy adults sleeping outside, if we go to the Burnside site where we also tested the air was less safe in that area than it was actually at the current site, the Harrison and the OMF property. So as I can't tell you the exact, you know, why or what level of healthy adult, but the standard, again, for residential was met, and that's as far as I can go with that answer. So in addition, we mentioned the Good Neighbor Agreement, and I wanted to talk about, you heard their safety manager earlier bring up the point of the safety of their employees. We also are concerned about the safety of the members and the visitors at R2D2. What we'll be proposing in the Good Neighbor Agreement and the use agreement is that we actually develop a disaster plan, a safety disaster plan in cooperation with our first responders and East Side Plating. And hopefully we'll be even be able to coordinate drills with them so that the camp will be able to, in case of a disaster at Eastside Plating, respond the same as the employees of Eastside Plating would respond to evacuate the area. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. Are you done? All good? Mark? Tim?
So I'd like to briefly explain the site here. This is Third as it curves around and becomes Division.
Sir, could you put your name in the record?
Tim Merrill. The and I'll explain some of the buildings on the site. This what's shown here is a 53-foot container for people's belongings, and we may need to relocate that if we change this drive situation. There are some tents up front here that are for just a single overnight guest. These are 10-person tents, and they would be observed by the gate, which is located here. So whoever's in charge here would be able to see what's happening with these people. These tents are for the dreamers, who are the people who will manage the camp and live here on a more permanent basis. The other tents down here are for guests who will be there for an indefinite period. The actual buildings on the site are two restroom and shower buildings here, a laundry building, a meeting room, and a kitchen. And there are some outdoor areas here for also for kitchen outdoor dining use. We've located some facilities near the street here so that people can come and drop off donations at this location. And the tent area will be enclosed with a screen that we've discussed before, part of which will be done with doors. And Mark Lakeman can explain the balance of this and show you what this will look like.
So I'm Mark Lakeman, and Tim Merrill and I have been working to provide some planning and architectural support for the project for the last about year or so. And just like to say that it's been quite a balancing act as we've figured out the perimeter setback needs and how to kind of fit everything onto the site that is desired in the program. You'll notice that the buildings that classify as structures that add up to 2,100 square feet are all aligned east-west because they're sitting on top of an access trench, which will provide the utilities and take away effluent and such from the site. So it's pretty logically located. Even though it is very much a pull-yourself-up-by-your-bootstraps kind of operation, at the same time, this is Portland and place matters. So what we're doing is trying to address every person's stated concern from an urbanistic point of view. That is, we're trying to make this safe and clean, and we're actually being collaborative and trying to build community through the design process. And we've treated the edge that is visible to all the community as they pass by or as they are a resident in the, or as they operate in the area with an interesting and kind of lovely edge. And this certainly isn't trying to be Shangri-La, but on the other hand, people are going to look at it, and a lot of people have an apprehension in advance about such an operation. So what we're trying to do, and I'll show you in this next image what it looks like from the ground, we're trying to make something that's rather spectacular and that we can be proud of. because as usual, we're doing things in advance of what other cities have even begun to consider. So when you look at it from the street, what you see is that these houseless people are actually doing things like trying to support distressed bee populations by providing pollinator habitat through their sculptural door wall that they'll be bringing over from their Burnside location. They'll be creating a beautiful edge that is lovely to look at and makes a statement about community. And when you arrive at the site, there will be a gateway which announces that you've arrived at something of a village of people that is a cultural space. So it'll be a lovely thing, and it'll speak to the street like the best kind of architecture must do in the urban city, in the urban core. And even along the southern edge, which is really just a kind of a woven fence wall, it steps along with the landscape and can be made into a lovely amenity as well. Within the site, going back to the site plan, we're surrounding the perimeter with raised planters and kind of perennial features and really trying to make the most of the site and to vegetate it so that it's a shaded, it's not a barren landscape. It has plenty of sort of space for people to be able to move around and do the things that they're going to do, because this isn't just going to be a desperate place. This is going to be a place that will inspire people in other cities as well.
So, Mark and Tim, back to the earlier discussion, if it is necessary to modify the northwest corner of the site plan in order to address the truck movement issues, you're talking about having to change the location of the large container and some of the tents, but probably not the buildings, and therefore I'm assuming that the functionality of the site in terms of connecting to infrastructure wouldn't necessarily be compromised by those kinds of revisions to the site plan.
I think it could be modified, but the program is extremely compressed now. It could be modified, but I would like to speak to the issue of backing into the site. We've done a lot of good study, and we've consulted actual truck drivers. We've given them more than the code requires for backing an 8-foot semi into such a space. And so we feel that this is more than ample, and we appreciate everyone's concern, but on the other hand, we've done our homework.
Yeah. Well, obviously, if this proceeds, we'll need PBOT and you and the property owner to confer on, again, potential modifications, but I would assume it would be to that part of the site. Other questions for the team?
Well, I guess I had a question just going back to the previous discussion or Matt Wickstrom's presentation of the use agreement. I thought part of the determination of this community service zone was something about people not being there longer than a month. And so, Mr. Merrill, you pointed out an area where people would be staying for indefinite periods of time. Did I get that wrong? I see everybody shaking their heads. Okay. I'm confused.
More than a month.
More than a month.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay. Trish, you can say better than I can, but the way that the population breaks down is that there is a stewardship culture on site that manages the place, and they need longer residency to perform that function. But most of the population, I think 3/4 of the population, are people who are very short-term residents, and that management population does change over a relatively short period of time.
Mark, on the map that you've given us, can we go back to
site plan?
The site plan, excuse me. So you've got the toilets and the showers, you've got the kitchen, various things. So, do we know where there are existing water and sewer lines?
The water and sewer are located right out in front here on the street, so it should be just a straight shot from these buildings down to the front.
Okay.
So that was the reason for the axial kind of layout.
I don't know that the utilities have verified that, but that's your best sense that there is existing infrastructure in front?
That's correct.
And this is a concept plan. We didn't want to do too much design and engineering until we have the council's permission to move forward. So this is not exactly what it may end up being. It's also subject to Right to Dream and to the budget.
Okay, thank you all very much. And your next panel, Commissioner?
Yes, our final panel is Brad Molson from the Central Eastside Industrial Council, Sue Pierce from Hosswood Abernethy Neighborhood Development. I'm not sure if she's here yet. If not, we'll have her come in later. Shannon Singleton of Joint. Oh, Sue is here. Great.
There she is.
This is our final panel. After this, Council, what I might suggest is we move to public testimony and hold our questions till the end.
Okay, I think you're on first, Brad.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor Hales and Commissioners. I think I want to start. I have a statement from our Central Eastside Industrial Council, but I want to start with a personal comment. I have gotten to know Ibrahim and the Right to Dream staff over a period of time, and I am incredibly impressed with what they do and how they do it and everything else. And the position we're taking has nothing to do with Right to Dream. It has to do with what is, we believe, is compatible within the district. And so on behalf of the Board of Directors of the Central Eastside Industrial Council, we'd like to express our opposition to, one, vacating the Southeast Harrison and Southeast 3rd site, two, categorizing the residential use as a non-residential use and community service, three, considering a use agreement that cannot, by its terms, turn in into an illegal agreement and use with conditions. We are adamantly opposed to moving Right to Dream to the site, as Southeast 3rd and Harrison. This property is zoned industrial and is part of the industrial sanctuary. It is also located in a part of the sanctuary that is proving to be incredibly successful area for business to locate and thrive. CIC and many community stakeholders have been participating in a long process to develop a comprehensive plan for the Southeast Quadrant, and this is intended use is incompatible with the plan accepted by the council. The site is not zoned for housing, whether temporary or permanent. Since the agreement is for 10 years, these actions are considered to be permanent change to the status of this property. It will cause irreparable harm to the surrounding businesses and to the district's ability to increase employment and to fulfill the vision of the comprehensive plan. The original intent of this right-of-way was limited to transportation-related use. That transportation use is still badly needed in the district to accommodate truck access, as you will hear and you have heard from others, and to partially alleviate a significant need for additional parking in the district. Parking is an extremely short supply in the district and may have a dampening effect on the ability of the district to bring more jobs into the community. And of course, our collective homeless problem is more critical than parking supply, but that really is not the issue. Residential use of an industrial sanctuary property is the issue and is prohibited under the zoning code. The land, therefore, should remain in a permitted use for which it was originally intended, transportation. The existing right-of-way serves as viable access to emergency vehicles needed to direct access to the adjacent sites. This is an important life safety issue for the employees of the adjacent businesses, as well as the potential residents of the homeless camp. Uses directly adjacent to the site are industrial, using industrial processes and providing employment in industrial district. Can I?
Either that or just make sure we have a copy of your statement.
I only have two more minutes. Plans to vacate the street and locate a homeless camp on the site threaten the conditions of the permit approved for the adjacent industrial businesses. Future uses of the site that are not employment related and did not recognize the existing permits and that violate the social contract of our zoning code should not be allowed. Emergency shelters and short-term housing of any type are plainly and expressly prohibited in the industrial zones. These are the primary uses contemplated by proposed action. Regardless of whether the use occurs in a building or not, there will be people living, residing, staying on the site and using it for residential purposes 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Many will stay longer than 30 days, and I think at least 14 of them will become permanent resident dreamers. This is a residential use. No other conclusion is plausible. The site is adjacent to industrial facilities and uses. Establishing a homeless camp under these or any other conditions is not, in our opinion, a humane way of helping people experience the trauma of homelessness. People deserve a warm, dry place to stay with appropriate services close by and can cover their sustainability and dignity. We recommend the City Council request the Fire and Life Safety Plan reviewers at the Bureau of Development Services review the potential future uses of the site in conjunction with the existing uses prior to the City Council's approval of the street vacation, the zoning confirmation letter, or the use agreement. The city should not waste more resources in developing plans for the site if they do not meet the fire, life, and safety requirements for the potential site and uses. No one is saying there should not be no place to rest, and we should not be proactive in helping homeless, but not in industrial sanctuary land where residential uses are strictly prohibited for all the reasons listed above.
Thank you. Susan.
Thank you for this opportunity to share my thoughts. I have brought with me some copies and given them to Carla of a letter written last summer by the Hosford Abernethy Neighborhood Hand Board, of which I'm chair, that we wrote in response to the Right to Dream 2, the proposal to move Right to Dream 2 to the Southeast 3rd and Harrison site. The letter was developed after exploring aspects of the proposal, meeting with city commissioners and officials, meeting with members of Right to Dream 2, visiting their present site, and listening to Hand residents. The Hand Board has not since, the date of that letter, which I think is August 3rd, had much opportunity to discuss and update the letter. We've been distracted by other things, most recently air quality. And therefore, it was discussed very briefly at the Hand Board meeting on Tuesday, but my comments, which will reference the letter and the Hand Board discussions, should be considered my own and not those of the board. We agreed, and it said in that letter, that we could, were this plan to become a fact, we could work with the Right to Dream 2 community toward the, to help them become the best possible fit in the neighborhood. We were unconvinced that Southeast 3rd and Harrison is the right place for the Right to Dream 2, and I think that Brad Molson covered a lot of those reasons in his comments. I won't repeat them. And furthermore, we had some real frustrations about the public process surrounding the proposal, as well as the city's history of the phenomenon of homelessness is addressed. The fact that people are sleeping on the streets embodies a complex and many-faceted problem, and many of us already know a lot of the factors, so I'm going to kind of skip ahead in my notes. But I do want to comment that it's a difficult to find a job and maintain employment if one has no address, no place to shower before an interview, and if one must carry all one's belongings to the interview, and if there is no place for a good night's sleep and adequate assistance with medications and other means of managing chronic illnesses, be they mental health or addiction or those of a more physical, physiological nature, it's difficult to keep a job. We can talk about homelessness, ending homelessness, that's a dream. It ain't going to happen. It's like a chronic illness. There may be remissions and exacerbations, but like a chronic illness, it can only be managed and controlled with ongoing and appropriate treatment and attention. This should sound familiar to Commissioner Fritz, who shares my background as a nurse. Complex and complicated problems require a constellation of solutions. There is no one easy answer. Efficient number of shelter beds that offer a variety of settings, including places for all members of families to be together, places where couples can be together, and where someone whose family is a furry and four-legged or feathered and two-legged can be together. Those things aren't really available in the city of Portland just now. There are some changes in the last week that address some of these issues, but not all of them, and how that's all going to work remains to be seen.
So actually, Susan, Shannon is going to speak to some of that. So do you have any other
comments? Skipping ahead, let me go through my notes here because I do want to leave some things out. There are concerns about the public process. This came as a huge surprise to Hand and to the Central East Side not quite a year ago, putting us in an awkward position in terms of working with our constituencies. Some of those have been addressed. Some of the concerns about that have been addressed, but efforts have been remained spotty, and I would mention that I did not hear back from any member of the council when I sent that letter in August. So maintaining public process is critical. We would ask, and I would ask, that the city continue their efforts to support Right to Dream 2, continue the efforts to work with the homeless. And to, I've had to skip part of this, and so I'm lost my place. In closing, let me say that we spent, and I spent time over the course of the summer and in the intervening months working with Right to Dream 2. I have no qualms that they will follow through, continue the kind of work they're doing, and that they will be able to follow through with what they say they will do. I have to stop here and back up just a little bit to say that one of the critical things within this process will be the Good Neighbor Agreement, and that the city must be a part of that Good Neighbor Agreement for it to work.
Thank you very much.
My biggest concern, I have no qualms about Right to Dream 2, I am concerned about you, that you will be able to follow through. The onus to make this successful is on you, and please don't let us down.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Shannon Singleton, and I'm the executive director at JOIN, as well as the chair of the Home for Everyone Safety Off the Streets work group. The Safety Off the Streets work group is a group of folks that started meeting at the direction of the executive committee of A Home for Everyone with the charge of finding spaces for people to be able to sleep safely. This group included folks from the business community, from the social service provider community, members living at Right to Dream 2, and sites like Dignity Village. We started this process by defining what safety off the streets meant. And what we decided that meant as a group was that people are legally able to sleep there, that there are access to bathrooms, that there are clean facilities, that there's the ability to have heat or warmth, that there is overnight or oversight or support by people trained to support physical safety, that there is dry or overhead shelter, including tents or tarps, and that there is lighting designed to assure adequate safety. We specifically discussed a variety of options, acknowledging that the needs of the people sleeping outside, our homeless neighbors, are just as diverse as the needs of the housed population. Sites like Right to Dream 2 and Dignity Village came to the top of our priority list when we had to go through an exercise deciding which of all of the options we had did we want to support first. And the group agreed that supporting and strengthening the existing sites like Right to Dream 2 and Dignity Village were the top priority. Sites like Right to Dream 2 provide safety and options for couples, for people with disabilities, and for people of color in our community who we know are disproportionately represented among the homeless population. Facility-based shelter is not the only option, and it can't be the only option that we offer. These sites serve large numbers of people. They are extremely cost-effective, and we want them to also be connected to services like those mentioned by Sue, as well as supports to exit into housing. Essentially, I want to encourage this council to continue to support the work that Home for Everyone has done and that the Safety Off the Streets work group has done, and continue to support our top priority of supporting sites like Right to Dream 2 and Dignity Village.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions?
Shannon, I just have a question. When I had the honor of being the housing commissioner, one of the ongoing challenges for the Bureau was how to manage Dignity Village and how to be flexible enough to encourage a unique model that didn't quite fit anything that we were working on, but while also trying to provide adequate oversight. Mm-hmm. It took a lot of time and energy. One of the things we learned is that Dignity Village really wasn't temporary housing or really transitional housing. For some people, it became quasi-permanent housing. If we truly want to have experimental, innovative housing that's transitional, what's the city's role and responsibility there to make sure that people are being transitioned to someplace and it doesn't become, in a sense, permanent shelter, which I think none of us would say is adequate.
I think what, so Joyne actually has a staff position that works with Dignity Village, and her role is to support villagers in connecting with other services, be mainstream services or housing services. And so that has shifted some at the village as well, where folks are able to transition out much more quickly. excuse me. And I believe that that's also part of that, the requirement of council and of the city is to ensure that people have access to those services. Let's fund services that are mobile. We can't continue to expect people to come into offices to meet all these requirements. If we can get out and go meet people where they're at, they can be much more successful at moving forward in their lives.
So, Commissioner Fritz, in most of the housing that we fund in the city, we have very clear guidelines as to what our expectations are in terms of outcomes. And we are very rigorous with our nonprofit partners. And what are the, at least currently, what are the benchmarks, what are the criteria that we've established, and what are the benchmarks for evaluating that?
We're going to have an annual report, and I'm currently missing what's in that report, but it's going to be written by Right to Dream with input from Central Eastside Industrial Council, HAND, and others to report on their success and some of the benchmarks that Trish mentioned in terms of getting people into housing, into jobs, et cetera. I can look up and find the answer to your question.
What I found, I'm just looking at the, and I know it's a evolving document, but the Space Use Agreement, Exhibit A, in paragraph 5 under benchmark, it says there'll be an annual report, will include the number of people sheltered, number of people turned away from shelter, and such other information as the parties may mutually agree to. And I just wonder, since this is at the heart of what the Housing Bureau does in setting expectations when we have public money and the specific goals, and we hold people accountable. And first of all, have you worked with the Housing Bureau to develop a set of goals and criteria, and what's the process for developing them?
No, and we'll certainly be happy to work with the Housing Bureau on that. We're also thinking that would be part of the Good Neighbor Agreement discussion process to decide what's in the annual report.
If I can interject a question, I've always operated under the expectation there is no Housing Bureau dollars going to Right to Dream 2.
Correct.
That is correct from
correct.
This point and
yes.
going forward.
Yes.
That the $849,000 we received from some prominent Pearl District neighbors to fund this move is the source of money that pays for all the improvements occurring at this site, and there's no operational dollars expected from Portland Housing Bureau.
Not from the Housing Bureau. We have committed to providing utilities for the first year from the general fund, not from the Housing Bureau. I'm sorry?
You said for year one?
For the first year, and then we'll look at what's the utilization. It's not realistic to expect Right to Dream's volunteers to fundraise, to provide services for people who are not staying there. We're envisioning that this will be an east side area that people will go and take a shower, and that the water bill will therefore be higher than they currently have. But no, Commissioner, no Housing Bureau dollars. In response to Commissioner Fish's question, though, yes, we would absolutely collaborate with the Housing Bureau in setting benchmarks.
So, unfortunately, this produces a perverse effect, because on the one hand, we're saying no Housing Bureau dollars, which I guess by extension means no Housing Bureau staff, and yet we have charged the Housing Bureau as the agency of the city that has the expertise to establish housing, including Dignity Village, establish the criteria for what successful housing looks like, and then match the services with the housing. So, the extent to which this becomes a one-off that's not integrated with any of our housing systems, with all due respect to Dan on this, this becomes, I think, much less viable. I mean, and so are we in essence saying that because there are no Housing Bureau dollars, this project is divorced from the values of the Housing Bureau, from the expertise of the Housing Bureau, which is the only bureau of this city that has direct online experience managing Dignity Village?
No, Commissioner, we're saying that it's an interim place to make people be safe. And it's just like the mayor is coordinating with the Housing Bureau and with Commissioner Saltzman on his sleeping on the streets issue. If I might, I mean, we're trying to take this one step at a time. And if I might suggest that we go to public testimony, because there's a lot of people who've been waiting two and a half hours on the proposal to move that Right to Dream 2 should be allowed to continue working with the community and others. We would probably not be able to take a vote today. I understand, commissioners, that you have more questions of staff and experts, but I'm very mindful that community members have been here since noon waiting for an opportunity to testify.
I'm very mindful of that, too, but as someone who's being asked to pass judgment on it, I also have to know what it